Hello, everyone, and welcome to another wonderful episode of the One Board Podcast. I am Rick White, and here with me, as almost always, is a man whose name is really an acronym for Really Yearning After Narwhals, Ryan Gutowski. How are you, sir?
Don't narwhals start with a G?
No, that would be Narwhals.
I yeah. thought it was G.
No, it starts with an N.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
I guess if they like gnawed on stuff, then they'd be Narwhals.
Narwhals.
That sounds like Southern narwhals. Like
narwhals.
I just sit here with my dip in my mouth and got a horn growing out my head. It's really just a really long tooth. That was a little more narwhal information than maybe you expected from the beginning of this podcast.
Oh, man. Narwhals are so fun. Oh, jeez. Yeah. I just want one that is bathtub size that I can just stuck in my bathtub, let them swim around for a little bit, and hang out with us.
It's like miniature pigs or something. You've got a miniature narwhal.
I got a miniature narwhal.
I had a student the other day.
It's a rescue narwhal.
I forget what the context was, but I think she said, wait, narwhals are real? And we're like, yes, this is not like a unicorn. Like, this is a real animal that exists.
You want to know something sad? You want to know something sad? That was a high schooler. I had the same conversation with a 40-year-old man at work. So, yeah. He was like, for real? That's a real thing? For real? I was like, yeah, there's pictures on the internet.
Just because it's on the internet don't mean it's true. No, like on the old internet before things got awful.
Yeah, the good internet back in the day.
Right.
So, cool. So, Rick, we're here to talk about some games. We've got an amazing interview with Eric Summerer, the golden voice of board gaming. And we got Bob with us to round out the top 10 of our best of 2018 list. This is a stacked show, man.
Yeah, man. So we better get to what have we been playing.
Let's
so, Ryan, hit us with a game that you've been playing lately.
So, you know my love for Energy Empire. This is the Manhattan Project, Energy Empire. You introduced this game to me at Atlanta Game Fest when we were all together hanging out and playing some games. This is a fantastic game. Aaron got it for me for Christmas this year, which I was so thankful for. And I got to play it on New Year's Eve with some friends and got them to see the game. They loved it. They had a really good time. And then Aaron and I played, actually, just a couple days ago, we played two players. And honestly, I was concerned. I was like, it's not going to be as fun at two players because part of the mechanics of Energy Empire is it's a worker placement game. But when you place a worker on a specific site, the next person has to put a worker and an energy tile on that same site, basically outnumbering what you put down. And then the third person has to put down two energy tiles and a worker. So it's almost this one-upmanship that I really like about the game and makes the game a challenge because somebody's going to take what you need. But Energy Empire I thought it did a really good job of a two-player game feeling good. One of the changes that happen is you put a permanent worker on three different spaces on the board that are laid out, these three different industry types, and you put them on these three different types, so it is always going to cost you one extra person. And I think it worked out well enough that it didn't feel like there wasn't a challenge. Aaron and I went toe-to-toe, and she ended up, beating me pretty bad. So it was a really good game, and I was surprised that Energy Empire was so good at two players. So
that's awesome.
I'm even more excited to play it now that I know that, because one of my concerns about having this game, kind of like most games that are a little heavier than what we've got in our collection, is that I'm not going to get time to play it. That's what's happened with Terraforming Mars. I've played it once, and so Energy Empire, I think now that we know it's good at two players, I think it's going to be a lot more fun to dig into.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm glad we've talked a little bit about it, I think, in some different conversations. We talked about it as we wrapped up our Atlanta Game Fest stuff, but I do think it's awesome that you're able to see that it works for two players, because not a lot of games do that well. If it's doing well for four players, it doesn't necessarily mean that the adjusted rules for two work very well. But that gives this a little more legs, and maybe those people that are like, this is a game that is a little bit deeper, that I felt comfortable introducing this to some of our newer gaming friends back in, I think, November or December, and they really liked it too. So I think this is a good one that people should consider. I mean, and it's a little bit older. We found out about it a little bit later. But yeah, it's a good one for people to think about. Ryan, one of the ones that I have been playing or finally got to play was Biblios. Biblios, interestingly enough, I've had on my like to acquire
Biblios
list.
Is good, man. It's a great game.
Yeah, I don't know really what like got my attention so much about it, but it's one of those games that's just there's not a lot going on with Biblios. It's just a well-crafted gaming experience. So, you know, the theme is that you're trying to keep books in a library, but the theme kind of feels present, but not really. I mean, what you're doing is it's an auction style game, but beforehand you start with all the cards in a stack, and on your turn you're going to draw five cards. One of them you keep, one of them you put into an auction pile, and the other three, or it depends on how many players there are, I guess. I've only played with four, but you put out as many cards as there are other players. But you're drawing them one at a time, and you have to decide at that moment what you're doing with that card. So there's a little bit of risk involved. And so you end up with a handful of cards, and then you do the auction part where you're using those cards. You can use some cards that are gold to bid on some of the cards in the auction. You can bid on gold in the auction using some of your other cards. And your goal is to get the most of some of the five different colors, and they're point values represented by dice, which you can impact as the game goes on. That's kind of it in a nutshell, but there's really not all that much more to it. And so it's an interesting game of hand management. When we played it a few times, our friend Kyla, it looked like she was going to win both times, but somebody, like, because she had been manipulating the dice so that the colors we could tell she was after, she was going to get a lot of points. But then it turned out that like somebody had snuck in like right at the last minute to get that last card so that they won the color instead of her. So I think she did not get any points at all for our two games.
I have noticed one thing about Biblios. It does one thing really well, where it's broken into two very definite halves of games.
Right.
So you've got this front end game, and then you've got this back end game. And if you don't prepare for that back end game, you can really mess yourself up. I've been in that same situation where I felt like I was in a good position, and then I'm like, I don't have, like, I have one color, but I don't even know if I have the most of that color. And then I had some money, and I was like, what am I going to do with this money? So you can really mess yourself up by not focusing in the front end of the game. And then in the back end of the game, you're almost like just running to try to get anything you can, any amount of points.
Right. Right.
And so, but it's still a solid game. I've had games of Biblios where I've played really well, and I've had games where I feel like I've lost track of everything and just everything's gone wrong. So,
right. It's one of those where if you are like, there's some people that there's just like this mental thing of if the points don't seem close, then it feels like you really lost. Mm-hmm. But like, you might have been a card away from winning the entire game. Like I said, Kyla was two cards away from completely destroying us, but like had 0 points compared to other people who had like 12, you know, and things like that. So, but she didn't lose by that much. It just looks like she did on the score sheet. So there are some people that like that's really defeats them. Part of me wants to say like, get over it. It's just a game. But if that's a thing that really kind of would bug some of your gamers, maybe avoid it. But I mean, it's 11 years old, or I guess 12-ish years old now. But still a pretty solid game that people can add to their collection.
That's right.
Yeah. Ryan, you've got, you and I've got similar themes going for our next one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the next game is from Card Lords. You may remember Battle Goats, which we played. And actually that was, when we first started One Board Family, Battle Goats was one of the first opportunities to review a game, from a legit company. Like when we first started One Board Family, we reviewed our own stuff. Like went to the store, bought our stuff, bought a game, reviewed it, and we still review primarily our own games that we purchase. But Card Lords was one of the very first times where we were sent a game, we were sent Battle Goats, and Battle Goats was a fun game.
I liked Battle Goats a lot.
Yeah, you liked it a lot, and the kids loved it. We played it a bunch of times and did the review for it back in the day. And then, so Card Lords came out with a game called The Pirate's Flag, and I remember seeing the campaign on Kickstarter and just kind of lost sight of it, but I reached out to Tucker and got a chance to check out The Pirate's Flag. We got a copy in the other day, and we've played it, I think, three times already. It's a roll and move game, which is going to be like immediately somebody's going to be like, nope, not for me. It's like, you know, Life or Yahtzee. Not Yahtzee. Yahtzee's not roll and move. Why did I say Yahtzee?
Maybe you play Yahtzee in a weird way.
I do play Yahtzee pretty weird.
I keep moving these pieces around. It's like, that's trash. That's a pencil, Ryan. That was not a token.
Are you sure? I've got this nickel.
Yeah.
So, it's a roll and move game, and everybody's controlling a certain color ship, but people have special abilities that are attached to their captain that is running the ship. And then the die rolls are mitigated through a hand of cards, and that hand of cards is so powerful. So even though it feels like I'm rolling dice, I'm moving the spaces, your hand of cards change everything. So you can pull ships towards you with a magnet. You can, if a ship is just a couple spaces in front of you, you can grab the flag off the ship and pull it toward you. You can harpoon another ship. You can jump onto their ship and basically like run up beside them. The goal of the game is for one ship to go out, grab the flag at the end of the board, and then wrap back around through this snake-like channel of water, and then come back to the start line. So it's a capture the flag game. It's a lot of fun, and probably one of the best times I've had with a roll and move ever. The mechanics are simple, but there's so much depth that the cards bring to it. This is very much a family game, so you're probably not going to play this a lot with a bunch of gaming friends, but I'll tell you, when I brought it to work, everybody had a blast. In fact, tomorrow I'm going to be bringing it back into work with me because people wanted to play it again, and then I played it with the kids, and the kids had a really fun time with it. So it's a really good game. A lot of take that, a lot of like back and forth.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, you know, Roland moves... I think it's because when we were younger, like if you're trying to cash in on like a popular movie or, you know, cartoon or something like that, you make a roll and move and
that's
you
it,
make
yeah.
it to where, you know, it's, they were usually garbage. Those like licensed games that we had when we were younger. And so that put a bad taste in our mouths, but I mean, there are things that can be done with that approach that, you know, are fun,
yeah.
you know? So, hopefully, you know, people will give it a chance. I loved Battle Goats. That's one of my top five games that I want to get, I think, right now. So I need to come play that game with you guys.
Yeah, I think soon. You would really like it. I think it's especially one that if people aren't paying attention, it could go a little long, but you could play it in 30 minutes. And so I think it's one that actually your classroom might be a good fit for your classroom.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, another game that I've been playing is kind of got that pirate ships kind of theme to it, and that is Tortuga 1667, and this is from Facade Games. They really popped up on Kickstarter and with like how attractive their components were, and I mean it's those games that you've seen that look like a tiny little book, and they have like Deadwood 1876, Salem 1692. Those are their other games. We saw them at Origins, and they were nice enough to give us a review copy of this. But we haven't had the collection of people, a big enough group for us to try it out until over the holidays. And so we played it twice with my wife's family. And it is a really fun twist on games like Resistance, where you've got hidden roles kind of going on. What's happening is you've got the French and the British trying to get the most gold. And so they each have there are two boats that could be controlled by either one. And then there's the island of Tortuga, And to start the game, you're all shooting at the Spanish Armada. So I guess we're picking on the Spanish. But you get their treasure and put it in your ship. And the captain of each ship gets determined randomly, but they get to decide where the gold goes. Now, everybody at the table is either British or French, but it's a secret. So you're kind of taking actions to try to get the gold, but maybe not give away what you are. In our games, like, it kind of revealed itself kind of quickly. So maybe we're just not playing it very well, or, you know, maybe that's something, you know, maybe that's just a part of the game to make it work better. I don't know. But then there are cards that are secret that down below the game board, which, like I said, represents the ships and Tortuga. But these are actions that you would have to take if you draw that card. And one thing that's cool about this is, like, you can take an action on your turn to, like, look at two cards so that you can kind of know what's going on. But then another action that you can do is you can tell any other player to draw, to choose between two cards that they need to draw. And whatever they draw, they have to do it. Or you can draw one of the cards on your own. So it's kind of like there are some bad cards out there, but it's kind of like you can punish the opponent with some of the stuff. And we did some things where, like, we would try to punish ourselves so that we could use the negative consequences to, like, impact the other players and stuff. But it was really fun. It's, you know, one thing about Resistance is a fun game, and it's one of the first ones I played when I got into board games a little more heavier. But one thing about it is there's a lack of concrete stuff to it. Yeah. With Tortuga, there's a board, and so you can kind of see what's going on. You have a better understanding of your progression. Has the few times that we've played it had this part where, like, we are going to start to house rule it where there's a limited amount of time for communication, because it eventually, like, everybody knew who they were, so people were kind of planning moves ahead, but it got to be where turns were way too long, so I think we're going to try to limit the amount of discussion. And then, like, we also had it to where, like, the ending of the games was, like, you knew that you were going to lose and there wasn't really anything you could do about it. Which, you know, it's going to happen sometimes, but it'd be great if that wasn't the case each time, and maybe it'll be better in the future.
What if you added a timer, a sand timer to it? Do you feel like that would, some sort of like two or three minute sand timer? Does that seem like something that could be, and I think it would go with the theme too, especially if you found like a sand timer that went with that pirate theme, something wooden or wooden and glass. I think it would look really cool too.
Well, and I think too, like, maybe it's, you know, before the quote-unquote first player goes, you both teams have 5 minutes to plan what they want to do, and then on a turn you have like a minute or 30 seconds or something, so that, like, you've got that plenty of planning time, but, like, you've got to execute as you kind of go around the table, because we had 8 people playing, and it just got really long quickly. But it was still fun. One of my favorite things is that if you have an odd number of players, one of the players is Dutch, and they win if it's a tie. I don't know. Like, that seems like it would be hard given the mechanics, but I thought that was really funny.
That's cool. Awesome. Well, these are some great games that we've mentioned. You guys be sure to check them out. We're going to be working on reviews for Tortuga and actually 3 of the 4 games that we mentioned. You're working on in the spring. You're going to be working on an Energy Empire review, and then Tortuga is getting a review, and then the Pirate's Flag is going to get a review in February.
You know what? If I get bored, Biblios might get one too.
That's awesome. Yeah. Very cool. Well, we will see you on the other side of this break. We've got the amazing Eric Summer from the Dice Tower on the show. So check out that interview on the other side of this break. Here with Eric Summer of the Dice Tower. How are you doing today, Eric?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on the show. We wanted to talk about just family gaming in general and what your experience has been being a dad and gaming and being part of the industry of this amazing hobby that we're in.
One could say a board game icon.
Oh, boy.
A board game icon.
I hope not.
Well, I feel like... Are there board game like head busts of people? Is that a thing that exists?
Oh my gosh, that would be so cool. Can we?
I once had somebody make a small puppet of me to use
similar.
In a video. Dave Luza once made a video puppet character, and then I got to.
Was it endearing or terrifying?
Why not both?
A little bit of A and B. So.
Just like many, many puppets, endearing and terrifying.
Yeah. It sounds like me. It just doesn't look like me. So, So Eric, you are a father, and you play games with your kids. Tell us about how you find time. You know, you are, first of all, you're a voiceover artist, and then you also work with the Dice Tower. You've been doing that for a dozen years now.
Yeah, something like that. I've been a voice actor for full time 15 years now. This is my 15th year doing that.
Awesome.
And so I, as my day job, I'm recording audiobooks, and then at night I'm often doing work for the Dice Tower, editing a podcast, recording said show, and I do a lot of traveling around to various conventions and stuff. So it's kind of hard to find time to get to play with the kids, but mm-hmm. we do. In the last year or so, we've tried to institute a family game night that is trying to be the same night every week. The kids look forward to it. We sort of rotate who gets to choose what we play. I'm often trying to play review games. Here's a new game. Let's try this, children.
Yeah.
And they like to bring out their favorites or something that they're interested in trying out. I'm trying to introduce some of the older games in my collection, the stuff that's been on the shelf for a while, because I said maybe the kids will like this someday. And I'm trying to bring some of those things out and try them out, see how they do. But we try and get at least a game a week going where we get to play something, if not more than that.
What are some of the favorite games for your family? What are they? Dexterity games? Are they trivia games? Are they party games? Like what gets to the table the most for you all?
Co-op games are almost always a success. The various pandemics have hit the table a good bit. Castle Panic is a favorite of my children. Stop Thief. The cooperative mm-hmm. version of that one with the Restoration Games app, although they've just updated that, there's now a one versus many version.
Yeah.
And the kids are all over that. They want to be the villain. They want to hide. And the app lets you sort of, you know, trace your path and where are you moving? And then it makes the sound effects and everybody else has to figure out where you are. So both children have really enjoyed being the bad guy for that.
We're raising our children to be thieves. It's wonderful.
I know. be as sneaky as possible. And my eldest has really gotten into word-based party games.
Okay.
He loves Decrypto. He loves Crosstalk. He loves... some of the drawing games he's done very well with. That's sort of his flavor. Oh, Catchphrase. He went out and bought a copy of Electronic Catchphrase because we played it at a party over Thanksgiving. And he's like, nope, I want to own that. And so we've actually been playing four-player games of Catchphrase with just the four of us in the family while we wait for another party to bring this thing to.
That's really cool. That's awesome. And so we're just coming out of the holidays, I guess. What was one of the games that you guys really enjoyed during the holidays, or maybe it was something that you guys got during Christmas? What's something new that you guys have gotten that everybody's been really hype about?
Well, I mentioned Pandemic. I got Pandemic Fall of Rome. That's
oh, okay.
one that we've played. I got my son The Reckoners, which is the co-op game based on the Brandon Sanderson books. We haven't played it yet. I think because he doesn't know this IP, mm-hmm. This is one that I need to sort of guide to the table. But I thought it was one he would enjoy. I got to play it earlier, so I picked up a copy. He just isn't motivated to bring that to the table. The one that he was most excited to get is called Brain Games, the game. This is a series. Mm-hmm. I think National Geographic put it out. I know it's available online. But Brain Games is all about the way our minds work and how it can be fooled with optical illusions and logic puzzles and leaps of logic and misconceptions. And so there's this game about collecting tokens of various logic types, solving puzzles, being faster than your opponents to figure out what the solution is. And he's been all over that game because it's one that I think he's very good at. So he's mm-hmm. enjoying beating everyone in this mind trivia style game.
He's like my wife.
My 10-year-old was a huge fan of the Brain Game series. When it hit Netflix, she plowed through every one of those episodes and then started rewatching them again. She loved that series. And then some friends of ours, we were over there for a game night before Christmas, and they had a copy of that Brain Games board game out on the table. And she was like, there's a board game for this thing. I love it. So, yeah. So conventions, you talked about traveling to conventions and things like that. You have obviously grown in your notoriety within the board game hobby over the years. And does it get any easier, or like how has it changed going to these different conventions? We actually we ran into you at Origins this past year. This was our first time at Origins, first time at a big convention. But how has that changed as you've grown in the hobby and as you see all these fans and as the hobby grows in general?
Well, I mean, just general growth is fantastic because everything is more lively every year and there's more people to meet, new faces to meet. As far as my interaction with it, it's become much more formalized as I go to these large events. It used to be in my first year of being on the Dice Tower show, I just showed up and met Tom Vassell, and we wandered around Origins. we didn't have any booth presence. We got into the exhibit hall early and did some recordings. We tried to get some interview audio and incorporate that into a podcast. But it was much more freeform during the rest of the day. We'd just play games all day. And these days, we usually have some sort of booth presence or we have scheduled events and we have a lot more formal scheduling. And a lot of it is standing at a particular booth at a time. We've got a schedule. I've got a shift that I need to be at. And we get to chat with people there. And that's a little bad because it means I don't get to just wander and play games all day. Mm-hmm. But it does give us a solid place that people can see us. And we know – I know that I'm going to be here at a certain time and I can meet with people. I can know that I can meet with a friend and say I'm at this booth at this time. And it also gives us sort of a cool output. We're often filming something or recording something, doing a live show at these events. And it gives it just a little bit more spectacle for us to produce something as well, rather than just sort of sneaking around the hallways and catching audio as we can.
That's cool. Well, we are very excited about attending Origins our second year in a row. That's something that I'm already excited for.
In the position that you find yourself where you're reviewing so often, and like you said, you're still able to play some games for fun, but like, how do you keep the gaming fun? Like, how do you make sure that you're not wearing out your game partners with like, here's a new game and let's learn new rules and stuff? How do you kind of keep that balance?
I think the way that we run our game group helps. We have something called the pick list. Every year, our game group organizer shuffles everybody's name and puts us all in a spreadsheet. And we work our way down the list. Each meeting, it's the first person's choice what we play. And then the second person can choose a game if there's enough players. And then everybody sits on those games. And so sometimes when it's my turn, I'll always bring out a review game, something I haven't played yet. But then when it's somebody else's turn, they will pick a favorite from the shelf, something that hasn't hit the table in a while or one that they really enjoy. They don't want to learn any new rules, and we can just sort of jump into it. So I get to waver back and forth. It's not always work when I get to play games. And, of course, the kids are not always wanting to do something new. They are often wanting to play something that they recognize. And so I can sort of rejuvenate that way. And plus, I enjoy learning new games. So I just try and keep the variety strong. And try and do different things. What really gets me lately is the travel. You know, sometimes as fun as it is to go to these events, it can be a little grueling sometimes, especially when it's a long convention, a 5-day, 6-day event that can really wear down after a while.
Definitely. Well, Eric, thank you so much for taking time for us tonight. Thank you for just chatting about family gaming and how you make that a priority for your family. And hopefully we'll get to run into you at Origins, man.
I hope so.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. So Ryan and Bob, a few days ago, were putting up their top five lists from 2018 of the games that came out last year. But, you know, those guys don't just stop at five. You know, they had to keep going. So we wanted to go ahead and reveal numbers 6 through 10 on each of their lists. So we'll talk to them and get a little bit of information about each one of those. So, Ryan, let's start with your... You want to go start with number 10 or you want to start with number 6? I'll let you guide this for us.
I don't know. I feel like we started with 1 through 5. I feel like we should just go 6 through 10. So let's...
Hit us with your number 6. Do it.
Okay. So number 6 for me would be Space Park from Keymaster Games. This game was a hit for our family. We got it at the end of summer when it fulfilled from Kickstarter. And Space Park has just been beautiful on the table, and the kids have really taken to it. The gameplay is really smooth. It's been cool because we've invited non-gamers to the table to play Space Park, and it's been really fun. Like, I feel like this is a game that we keep coming back to. The mechanics are solid. It's not too difficult to understand, and I've played it at least a dozen times, and I still really enjoy it. Space Park's my number 6.
Nice. I like that one, too. I got to hang out at Keymaster Game Studios a few days ago, and Parks that's coming out soon is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm really jealous, man.
Yep. All right, Bob, hit us with your number 6.
My number 6 is actually on Ryan's 1 to 5, and that is Welcome To. Now, I am a huge fan of Rollin' Rights. I love Rollin' Rights, and this falls right in that category. This is what some people would classify as a flip and right. This is a city builder, flip and right, and instead of having dice, you're using cards. You're flipping cards over. There's a set of cards on the table, 3 decks that are split evenly, and you can choose 1 of 3 of those decks. Take the number, place it onto the paper. It's beautiful artwork. And there's just not... I mean, I really wanted to squeeze this into my top 1 through 5, but such as it is, it had to be my number 6. Welcome To Flippin' Right. It is a great game.
It's a pretty solid entry. Yep, it was kind of a rage for us last year.
Oh, yeah.
Ryan, hit us with number 7, sir.
All right, number 7 is actually Gizmos. That was a game that when we went to Origins, I was not very fond of. I was pretty open about the fact that Gizmos was not impressive at all. And then we actually played Gizmos with you, Bob.
Yep.
You brought it over to the house one night, and we played... we played it at Meeple's one weekend. So we played Gizmos. I was like, that was a lot better than I remember it. And then we played it again one night when you came over, me, you, and Aaron, and maybe Kendall, and then we got it for Christmas as a Christmas gift from my sister-in-law, and we've played it probably 3 or 4 times just since from Christmas to New Year's. Gizmos is a really solid game, and I like it a lot more than I originally did when I saw it at Origins. So Gizmos is my number 7.
I got beat by a little kid when we played it at Origins, so I don't know how I feel about it. All right, number 7, Bob.
My number 7 it was on Ryan's playlist at Atlanta Game Fest, and it is Endeavor Age of Sail. This is a...
Man, I wish I had gotten to play that. Yeah. I feel like it would have been in my top 10.
Yeah. It's a exploration, it's nautical theme, obviously, it's a little bit of card drafting, set collection, but the main thing is area control. And you're adjusting things like your money and your finance, your influence, your industry to basically reach out and put pieces on the board to extend your reach over the ocean and all these different continental areas. And I know some people have a hard time with area control. It can be not friendly inducive sometimes for some people, but I love area control and Endeavor Age of Sail, the deluxe. Now, I haven't played the regular version. I've played the deluxe Kickstarter version, and the pieces don't from pictures don't seem like they're that much of a difference, but I really loved this game. It was so good. I do not currently own it. I would like to. But that is my number 7.
Nice.
Sweet.
It's a good entry.
Ryan, hit us with number 8, sir.
I'm going back to space, Rick. Space base.
Oh.
Space base.
Yes. Space base was on Bob's top 5.
So good.
And Space Base was really surprising. We spoke with John over at AEG about Space Base, and he told us about it in an interview that we did at Origins. And the artwork just didn't, it wasn't enthralling at all. I looked at the artwork, I was like, yeah, whatever. And then once I got to play it just in October, I got to play Space Base, and I was like, whoop, gotta have that. As soon as we got home from Atlanta Game Fest, I was thinking about it so much, I had to go to the store, went to our local game shop, picked up a copy of Space Base, and we play it all the time. Love Space Base. Number 8.
I think that sounds like you have a problem that we need to address. I couldn't stop thinking about it, so I just had to buy it.
Hey.
It's my cardboard addiction. Hey,
I got a problem. That's all right, a thing. Bob.
My number 8 is Cryptid. This
good call.
Is, how would I describe Cryptid? It's essentially a mix of Clue and Battleship in a swamp and a desert.
I really like that.
Yeah, right? So you have hexagonal board layout that's comes in 6 pieces. All in all, it's probably about 100 hexes that all get put together in 6 big giant pieces, broken down into things like water, desert, forest, mountain, and you have a bunch of cubes that say that are no's and yeses. Now, based on the number of players that play in the game, you all have a book based on the color that you're using. That book has, I think, 86 clues. 86 or 87 clues, somewhere around there. Don't quote me, but somewhere around there. Those clues are not one of those clues is exact in the exact order in any book on the table. So my clue 86 is different than Ryan's clues 86 in his book, and then different in Rick's book. What you're doing is everyone on that table gets one clue for that game about where the monster is or isn't, or what it can be near or what it can't be near. You have one clue. So all 5, it's up to 5 players. If all players on the board have one clue, you have a little, what would you call that? A little meeple standy thing or whatever that you can pick up. You can place it anywhere on the board and ask anybody on the table, can the monster be here? Based off of their clue, the one clue that they know, they either put down a no cube or a yes cube. There are some other caveats, and obviously, but the game, the object, if you put down, ask someone a question, and you say, put down a cube and say, prove me wrong, I know the monster is here. It goes around the table. If no one can prove that person wrong, that's exactly where the monster is. And you win the game. Mm. So it's competitive. It's cooperative clue gathering with a winner.
It's really cool. It's one that I played at Atlanta Game Fest and really liked.
You were really impressed with that one.
It was. Now, I don't own it yet, but after I played it, it's an instant buy.
Yep.
Immediately.
Yep, I like it lots.
Immediately, lots I would tell anybody who asked, yes, buy that game.
Get it now. All right, Ryan, number 9.
Number 9 was my latest addition to 2018, Blue Lagoon. We got this as a gift on Christmas Day, and we've played Blue Lagoon probably 5 or 6 times already. It is a new game from Blue Orange Games, and the front cover looks like the cover of Moana, the Disney movie. This is a really great area control game. Bob, you got to play it with me and Aaron a couple nights ago.
So good.
Probably one of my, and it's a Kenitsia game, like this is probably one of my favorite area control games.
Yeah.
It makes you have really difficult decisions. We actually talked about it on the podcast 2 weeks ago, but this is a great game, and it came in just at the end of 2018 for me. Blue Lagoon is my number 9 of 2018.
Nice. And people, please know that you can also get me and Bob Christmas presents if you're ever feeling generous. All right, number 9, Bob.
This is my family. I will tell them next time.
I don't see why they can't be included in that statement.
Why, they can get us Christmas presents. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's very true.
So my number 9 is from one of my favorite designers, Rainer Stockhausen, and he did one of my all-time favorites, which is Orleans, or Orleans, or however you want to pronounce it. And last year, he came out with Altiplano. It's about an alpaca. That's it. That's my review.
End of statement. So you need more.
It is another, just like Orleans, it is another bag builder. So you will have cardboard chits that get placed into a bag, and you will pull them out one at a time, place them on your board. You're only pulling out like 3 or 4 chits at a time based on how many you're actually allowed to pull out. You can up that. And you're placing them out onto your own personal player board to take worker actions. You have a meeple that you're going to move around in a circle for different worker placement areas that are placed out on the board. And essentially, there's not a whole lot of theme, I guess you would say, to this game, other than sort of a little bit point salad. The goal is, hey, get as many victory points as you possibly can. So go around the board, draft the cardboard chits that you need, put them into your bag so you can draw them out of your bag to put on your worker placement spots to plan for your next turn. I just love the mechanic. I loved it in Orleans, and I love it in Altiplano.
Yes, and plus
Rick,
the artwork.
Altiplano,
that's
on your list of games to get.
I know, and I still haven't, and it's because it reminds me of Emperor's New Groove every time I see the cover.
yes.
I want in.
That, all right. That little alpaca guy, he's so cute.
Yes,
I agree. Yes. All right, number 10, Ryan.
Number 10 is Keyforge Call of the Archons. This is the generated deck game that comes in a little box. You buy a box, I think it's 36 or 37 cards in that box, and you just play with that deck of cards. There are, I forget, 6 or 7 factions, houses that you call upon. This has been probably the one of my favorite card games to come out in 2018. The reason why is because it's a card game that feels competitive, feels like something that has this big world behind it, but I'm not spending hundreds of dollars to get involved. Josiah and I each have, Josiah's got 3 decks. I've got 2 decks. I'm probably going to buy a deck or two later. Actually, Bob has like a dozen decks.
What?
And
don't say that out loud.
Yeah. I know. Well, you said, do I need to share
people
pictures?
People are listening,
Bob?
Man.
So, Keyforge is a lot of fun to play, and while this is not a game that's like Magic and, you know, Pokemon and all this stuff, I think this is the entry back into collectible card games that I was looking for. Something that's not going to consume me, but is still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So Keyforge, that's my number 10.
Ryan was sitting there thinking, you know what? There's just so much of this money I have sitting around. I need something else that'll just suck it all away. Oh, thank you, Keyforge.
Yeah.
All right. Give me 17 decks. All right, Bob.
That sound like
number
me.
Number 10. Yeah. There you go.
And my number 10 spot, Reef. Reef is my number 10 spot. Emerson Matsuchi is just nothing short of a genius. The man is just pumping games out with the Century Spice series, with the Golem Edition, the Eastern Wonders. Reef is awesome. It is like abstract strategy, fish, hand management, pattern building. It's so puzzly, and it hurts so good, is what I'm going to say. Because you're constantly thinking, okay, I have this card in my hand. I can only have three, but I need to pull these two colors to place on my board to set up for the third card that I just pulled. You're thinking three, four, five moves ahead while trying to also keep track of the other players and say, is Ryan about to take that card? I need that card. He better not take that card. It is a very good pattern building abstract game, and it's one of my favorites, obviously, top 10 of the year. And again, Emerson Matsuchi. And Plan B, or Next Move, actually. They're doing some really good things. So I'm just really happy. And I'm excited. Game. Emerson Matsuchi just, I'm going to say this. It's nothing to do with my top 10. But he's doing a Metal Gear Solid game.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm guessing that it may be along the line of Spectre Ops with the hidden movement That'd that he cool. did. So I'm hoping. We'll see. But either way, I'm probably going to get it and play it. So.
Yep, certainly. Yes, Reef, I think, is my current number one game that I want that I don't own.
Oh.
I need to get my hands on that bad boy.
I did not know you didn't own that.
Yeah, it makes me sad, too. well, gentlemen, thank you so much for sharing with us to round out this list. And if you haven't checked out Ryan and Bob's numbers 1 through 5, please head on over to oneboardfamily.com and you can check that out. And hey, you know what? While you're there, we've got a ton of stuff over there. I was checking as I was writing an article yesterday. We made like 150 articles last year alone. So there's plenty of stuff for you to check out. If you fall into the internet there, you can be there for a while. So check us out. And you know what? If you get done with our website, head on over to Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or YouTube. We're everywhere. and check out the content that we're writing. And you know what? If you love what we're doing, consider being a Patreon supporter. You can check out our website for more information about that. And you know what? That lets me get just as many cool games as Ryan. And that's really what this is all about, is, you know, me being satisfied.
Yeah.
What Patreon does is it's a way for you guys to give, if you like what you hear, like the website, it's a way for you guys to give to us on a monthly basis. There are perks to people who give. We've got a Slack channel. We actually, $5 a month, we send a game each anniversary around June of each year. We send you a game to say thank you for being a Patreon donor. And it's really cool to be able to connect with you guys and give you questions and survey you on different ideas. And on top of that, what this allows us to do is go to conventions, buy equipment to make our content better, buy games that we couldn't buy previously. So thank you to all our Patreon donors out there. We really appreciate you.
And hey, Ryan told me the other day that we're on Spotify. So if you like to use Spotify, Check out the One Board Podcast on there if that's easier for you. But hey, you guys, we hope you have a great week. And until next time, we'll see you at the table.
Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.